Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Fortress Comic News, episode 360. I am one of your hosts, Chris, along with my co-host, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Nothing much, man. Just messing with time, I guess. Pulling a fucking Barry Allen today and turning the clocks backwards or something like that.
Daylight savings. Caused you to take your nap a little early today?
Yeah, dude, I never take naps, and I was just like, I laying on the couch, passed out. It's been a weird morning. I was like, didn't know what time it was at first.
That's my favorite thing now is when I like pass out watching a movie on the recliner. And then I wake up and I'm just like, I've become my father.
Yep. That's pretty much it. But no, we have a guest today. Caleb Palmquist will be on the show. We're gonna talk about Dragon Grit. Looks like a really cool book. Cowboys, dragons.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah, it looks pretty sick. Yeah. Looking forward to that. And so I don't know if you saw we've talked about it when it originally came out, that Fallout. There's a lot of Fallout stuff going on. So like the Fallout video game, the Magic card shit dropped this weekend, and then they had a new trailer come out. And man, the show looks really good, so I'm excited for it. But it's like, there's a lot of Fallout stuff happening this year. It almost makes you wonder if another game is going to be announced.
They need to make another game.
Yeah,
it's been a long time, man.
And
if they go according to order, because the next game's already announced, which is Elder Scrolls 6.
Right.
Or to people out there, Skyrim 2.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Fallout. And I think Elder Scrolls 6 is going to be what's-his-face's last game. I forget the guy who runs Bethesda.
Oh, okay.
But, they need to do something because Fallout has a hardcore fan base, and they need something.
Yeah, I played the one that takes place in Boston. It was kind of fun, but I always find myself dropping out of those open exploration games. I don't know.
Yeah, it depends. Fallout was like, I would drop out of those. To be fair, I drop out of those early, you know, after like 30, 40 hours.
Yeah, after I put about 2 weeks into it, then I'll stop. Yeah.
But I do like the Bethesda games. There's something about them that just clicks with me.
Dune 2 came out. Did you happen to go see it?
I haven't had a chance yet.
I keep saying I need to watch the first one. But I haven't had the time to do that. But I just keep seeing the memes everywhere about like the dancing and the worms and all the shit. It's like, I gotta see the movie, but the memes have been really good. There's been a lot of memes everywhere.
So funny story. So I had been I'd met somebody and I went on a date right yesterday.
Okay.
And we've been talking for a while and then we finally decided to go out. So she had only seen the original Star Wars movies, nothing else.
Okay.
So she's a much happier person than I am.
Yeah, right. Yeah, better outlook on the world.
And we were talking about it, and she's like, you know, we're going through it. And then I have to introduce her to the wonder that is I Hate Sand. It's coarse and it gets everywhere.
Yeah.
And honestly, I've been making fun of that scene for so long, and I haven't watched that movie in so long, I forgot how bad that scene really is.
Oh, it's painful, dude.
And I pulled it up on YouTube, and we both just broke out laughing. And then she looks at me and goes, why do you love this so much? I go, I don't know. This should have been the moment I stopped, but I didn't.
This is where I should have turned back, but for some stupid reason I kept going.
It was a very introspective moment for me.
Yeah. And hey, any date where you could pull up a video of Anakin memes, it's a good date.
Yeah, it was a good time.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
The last time I watched that was years ago when I was like, I'm gonna watch the, you know, 1, 2, and 3 all in a row, and I got about to the part where he's on the couch talking to Padme about how his heart hurts. It hurts for you each day I go, and I'm like, what? As a kid, I was like, man, this is funny stuff, you know, Star Wars, pew pew. As I'm watching it now, I'm like, the fuck? I don't want to sit through this. This is awful.
It's so, that's why I keep saying, like, I think history has been good on episode one and has been really good on episode three. Like, those two movies are solid. I think the third one's actually a good movie. Episode two is just unwatchable. And I don't know what went wrong or how it went so horribly wrong.
Yeah.
And also the fact that the greatest thing in Star Wars, the Clone Wars cartoon, up until like recently came out of that movie is another like, that what doesn't the make fuck any is sense. Going on?
The high and low of the franchise.
It's it's crazy, man. But
that's funny.
Yeah, to everybody out there, like, just pull it up on YouTube. It's like 20 seconds.
Yeah,
it's worse than you remember.
It's a pain.
It really is.
Longest 20 seconds of your life. It'll make you want to watch the YouTube ads.
Of course, it's everywhere.
All right, we'll talk a little bit about some TV stuff. Really cool news: Netflix, The Last Airbender, is being announced being renewed for another second and third season. So that's cool. Looks like we're actually going to finish out the entirety of the story, I'm assuming, like, because it would finish after three seasons if we follow that correctly. That's exciting for me. I really enjoyed the first season. I'd like to see more. So,
How long is the cartoon?
Cartoon's three seasons.
Oh, that's it?
Yep. Yeah, but I think more episodes. There's more filler episodes for sure.
Okay.
But the live action, they definitely cut out a lot of the filler that didn't need to be there, which is fine.
So I haven't finished season one yet, but does season one fit like the story of season one of the cartoon?
Yeah, it pretty much like it like rounds off where they leave off in the first one. There is just a little bit of like by the end of the first season in the cartoon, like Aang has waterbended like very early on in the cartoon. Because he has to master all the elements. And I believe by the end of this season in the live action, he doesn't waterbend at all, which is interesting. Okay. I don't know why they did that or what direction they're going to go with in season two. Because he's supposed to like fairly quickly learn how to, you know, master all the elements. So
it sounds like possibly a fourth season is possible.
Yeah. Yeah. If they want to like split some stuff up.
Okay.
Which is fine.
Yeah, what I've watched has been good. There's been so much good stuff coming out, and it's just getting worse as like the weeks go on. I'll talk a little bit in a second about some stuff I watched this week, but I really like what I've watched of it so far. It's a great show.
Oh yeah,
even with its minor flaws of like bad green screen.
yeah, for sure. You know when they're not. when they're not on Earth.
But outside of that, like, it's just a really great show. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say things you can avoid watching. I watched Argylle this weekend.
I kind of wanted to see that. So I'm interested here.
I don't know how I feel about it. It's one of those movies. So it has like a 20 something percent of Rotten Tomatoes and a 77% fan reaction on Rotten Tomatoes. I watched it and I would say, I mean, the cast is great. You got like Samuel Jackson's in it, John Cena, obviously Henry Cavill, Bryce Dallas Howard. I can't remember the main spy guy, but like the premise is interesting. Weird to find out that in the books, the cat is the detective that solves the crimes, because the cat in the movie does nothing of the sort. It's just a cat that she carries around the whole movie. There's a lot of like double crosses and double switches, almost to the fact that it's like very comical in a spy movie. And like, so like the first half, you think they're taking themselves like kind of seriously with a little bit of comedy. And then by like the second half of the movie is like a fever dream. And I don't know what the hell is going on. There's like some crazy scenes in there where they're just like, the dialogue is like so cheesy. And it's like the comedy is like turned up a bunch. I think I had fun watching it. Maybe you just watch it and let me know what you think, but it was, I just don't know how to describe it. I wouldn't say it was awful, but I wouldn't say it was a put together movie. I don't really know, honestly.
Interesting. Yeah. You saw it in theaters?
No, I saw it because it's out streaming now. I think
it is.
Oh, yeah, you can rent it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As you're saying that, it just is destroying every preconceived notion I have of it, because this is what the trailers made me think. So if we accept that James Bond is a male power fantasy, this movie to me looked like taking that and putting the feminine twist on it, because it almost seemed like the spy in this was like that Bond like figure where he was this like suave dude that everybody wanted to be with. But we were doing it from the perspective of the woman not really chasing after him, but like, you know, her fantasy towards that. And I was like, that's an interesting twist. I kind of think this sounds good. And now you're saying this and I'm like, that's not at all what I saw in a trailer.
Yeah. It's like she, so what she's writing is actually happening in the world with spies. So like some spy network comes after her and there's a whole reason why. And
yeah, I saw that subplot, and that's where I got kind of like, she was writing, because the main character is an author writing the story of the spy.
Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah.
And maybe so I thought maybe it was her writing it like that kind of story from her perspective and it coming to life. And I was like, oh, that.
There's a bunch of like twists, and there's like five or six twists in the movie where they like reveal something, then they reveal it again, and they reveal it. And it's like, okay. And it's hard to really say anything because like part of that's the movie. So, yeah.
Okay. So it's not at all what I thought it was going to be. I'll probably still watch it.
I still haven't watched Aquaman 2 yet, though. So.
Same here. Don't worry.
Yeah. I did watch Delicious in Dungeon episode 10.
Oh, nice.
I kind of glazed over for the politics talk, but I know they not politics talk, but I know the humans were talking about the orcs and the elves and some rings of magic that they're trying to figure out a secret to.
Yes. I have that written down as backstory on dungeons.
Yeah.
And that's basically what it was them being like, this is why the dungeons were created. And it has to do with this. Definitely not Lord of the Rings backstory. Yeah,
inspired backstory about these magical rings. So that was interesting. The giant frogs and them wearing the frog suits was kind of funny.
That was funny, yeah.
And then like the suits getting stuck to them.
Them coming to the realization that to fight the giant dragon in frog suits was phenomenal.
Yeah, they're like, oh, so we have to keep the frog suits on to fight the dragon. Yeah. And then they're kind of just preparing to fight the dragon for the next episode, right? So,
yeah, so let's see. I got, suits made of frog skin for protection. They eat the giant frog leg meat in a skillet.
Yep.
Well, that was interesting. We had the backstory. Then they deep fry the frog meat. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, the cliffhanger is they get to the orc city that we learned about, I don't know how many episodes ago.
It's like completely destroyed.
Yeah, it's destroyed, annihilated. We find out that the dragon was there, and there's all these signs the dragon was there, including like a dragon head-shaped hole in one of the bridges, which is really funny.
Yep.
And we end with them being like, okay, the dragon is here, there it is, we see it, and now we have to attack. And so I'm assuming next week's episode is fighting a dragon,
prep the party.
So 100% we're getting dragon steaks next week.
Hell yeah. Hopefully if they kill it, we'll see. Unless it's not a total party wipe.
Yeah. And then I did like the backstory of like, because how the dungeons are made in like these worlds is kind of interesting to me. Like, we take for granted that like we play Zelda and there's just a dungeon.
Yeah.
But like for someone to actually stand there and be like, this is why they exist, was, I'm sure it's been done before. I don't read a ton of fantasy, so excuse me. But that really interests me because I'm like, oh, okay, this makes sense. Like in D&D, it makes sense because usually the dungeon is something. Like the dungeon is.
Yeah.
An old dwarf village that has been ransacked or, you know, whatever. But they created their own lore between, like, how the fight and the orcs went underground and created all this and blah blah blah.
Yeah, no, I think awesome, it's cool show. Yeah, I really like it.
I also watched so two other anime hit Netflix. And both just happened to fit my like interest level. Okay. One's the new Pokemon show.
Oh, nice.
I
did hear about that.
Horizons, I think it was called.
Okay.
Watched the first episode and I enjoyed it. It's definitely so we're at a reboot point. Like, if you don't know, spoilers for the end of the Pokemon anime, Ash finally becomes a champion. Then rides off into the sunset.
Nice.
So we're no longer following Ash. We have this new girl, and it's taking place in the new game. So she goes to this school, but this school is in the Kanto region. So that was an interesting twist to it. And it's the school where you learn how to tame, battle, train Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets there, and like any good show, she has some sort of object that has immense power. People are after it. She gets attacked. Somebody saves her. I want to watch more, but the first episode was, it was fun. I liked how the battles were. The battles in this reminded me a lot of that manga I read, mm-hmm. where they seem more action-packed, and that the trainer actually has like has to do something during the battle and just stand there.
Yeah.
And be like,
yeah, that's always
Thunderbolt.
Good. Right. And just stand there and just watch. Yeah.
And then I watched the Dragon Quest Adventures of Dai anime, the first episode. And it follows like the first half of the first volume of the manga.
And, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I really liked it. It's, we'll talk a little more about this later, but if you like Dragon Ball Z and stuff like that, it's fantasy Dragon Ball Z.
Mm-hmm.
Considering Dragon Quest, all the characters are created by Akira Toriyama. And although he didn't draw this manga, it's very much like his style, his designs from the game. So there's a lot of that in there.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I got to finally watch the Dragon Ball Z movie, Superhero or whatever it was called.
Oh, yeah. So you got to see Special Orange Piccolo?
Yeah, I actually really liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with the movie, like the Red Ribbon Army coming back and stuff. I will say the animation was really interesting. I didn't think I was going to like it at first, but I ended up really liking it.
Yeah, and if you like that, this Dragon Quest show is a lot like that. Like, not quite as CG heavy.
Yeah.
In terms of the actual, like, characters.
Uh-huh.
But they do use a lot of CG to get you through hand-drawn scenes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And the only issue with this one is this isn't something Netflix original, like Delicious in Dungeon and Pokemon. This is, I forget who did it, but they just dropped the whole thing. It's 50 episodes. So if you like it, it's a lot. But at the same time, it's also a lot.
Yeah, right. So,
yeah.
All right, everybody. We're going to jump to this interview with Caleb Palmquist, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody. We've got another very special guest for you all. Everybody, please welcome back to the show, Caleb Palmquist. Welcome, Caleb.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, yeah, glad you could be back and that I could be here for this. I know Chris and I have enjoyed your other projects in the past, the vampire detective projects. I love the one in space. I'm a big sci-fi guy, so that was a lot of fun.
I've got unicorn sitting by my bed, too. I haven't cracked it yet, though. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess Chris and I were kind of talking about this too. This new book that's on Kickstarter right now, we're going to talk about Dragon Grit. It's kind of a little bit of a turn away from your norm, I would say, or I guess as far as like the vampire stories and things like that. But
yeah.
If you want to talk about it a little bit,
Sure. Yeah. Dragon Grit. It's a fantasy Western, and I wrote it actually with my wife. It's the first time we're co-writing something together. She's a novelist. Oh, nice. And, it's kind of based on like my favorite genre to like of movies and books is Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
And she really likes fantasy, especially dragons. And so we kind of wanted to do something that merged the two things that we really liked. And I would say, yeah, it's a little bit of a departure from what I usually do, although I've been doing a lot of fantasy lately.
Right.
I would say that this is, even though it's got a dragon, it's relatively light fantasy. I would say, like, in terms of themes, it's way more Western than it is fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no wizards in this world. There's no goblins. It's just imagine that you had the Wild West and you took out the horses and you put in dragons. And so that's kind of what it is.
So you arguably took the best part of fantasy and just said, let's put it in Western. Yeah. Everybody loves dragons.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always feel bad when a horse dies in a Western, but I don't know how bad I would feel if, like, a menacing dragon dies. I don't know. It depends on how attached I get to that creature.
I know. I heard people got really attached to that. What's that dragon movie where they're flying around? How to Train Dragon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I heard people got really attached to those dragons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if it's a Pixar style dragon, then I'd feel a little more bad. But I noticed that, like, in the art on your page and stuff like that for the project, you know, the main character is kind of riding like a red dragon, and there's some other Chris has got it pulled up right there. There's some other dragons, like she's fighting with someone else that's like riding a gray dragon. Is there anything you touched on with that in the story of, like, you know, different species or different types? Anything like that? Is there more to it?
Oh yeah. There are three dragons in the story that I would call main characters. Mm-hmm. And two of them will meet in the first issue. The main thrust of the story is Vera. She's an ex-outlaw, and she's kind of trying to go straight, essentially. And she mm-hmm. agrees to take on a job. This young man inherits his father's estate, and he's kind of like been educated out east. He's like a city slicker, I guess is the right mm-hmm. term.
Yep.
And he inherited this dying mist dragon, who's been in his family for generations. And the dragon keeps wandering off, and he can't figure out why. And Vera immediately recognizes that this is a wild dragon who's trying to go back to her dragon graveyard. Like elephants go to an elephant graveyard, like they remember yep. where they're, and and so he hires her to escort him across the wilderness, because they have to basically follow the dragon because they don't know where the graveyard is.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while she's being pursued by an old rival of hers named Jack, who leads a gang. But so her dragon is a fire dragon. And then her rival, Jack, he's got a dragon named Ruin, who is also a fire dragon. And then the dying dragon is a mist dragon.
Oh, cool.
It's like an exceptionally rare type of dragon. And so there are different types of dragons in the story, for sure. Mm-hmm. And there's also something that we get into as the story goes on is, like, horses. There's like wild dragons and domesticated dragons, and they're almost as different as, like, wolves and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, if you have a dragon that's been bred over many generations, it has certain domestic traits.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a wild horse, I mean, sort of like, to bring up, an animated example. My wife really likes the movie Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron. You guys mm-hmm. seen that movie?
Yep.
Matt Damon is the horse. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot.
It's a great movie though.
Yeah. And you know, he's like a wild horse who can't be tamed. Right. And so there's some elements of that. It that definitely is a factor, and the dragons that she's fighting in this first scene in the preview are really like your run of the mill, like outlaw dragons that are like they've been bred and they're not like particularly special,
mm-hmm.
And if you notice in the preview they don't breathe fire, and so while. Well, two of the main dragons are fire dragons. It's like, that's like something of an exceptional thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say it's really cool. And the art is pretty fantastic too, of like showing off some of the like the air battling between the gunslinging on dragons in the air is gonna be it's
a lot of, yeah, it's a lot of fun. Kay Wilhizer is the artist of this book, and she worked with me last year on a different book called The Knight and the Lion.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first book we worked on together, which was really great. And then, yeah, she does great with action scenes, and I think she and I work together really well because I really like to, I'm a big fan of decompressed storytelling. Mm-hmm. And, I like to, you know, let all the actions have time to breathe. And so, I was actually worried about writing this fight scene, this like aerial fight scene. It's like a dog fight. And mm-hmm. I think she really nailed it. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And my favorite part of any Western are like the classic guns. And my absolute favorite is the lever action rifle that you have here.
Yeah.
I'm sure, like you said, you're a big fan of Western, so you had an idea of all the different weapons you wanted to use. But was there a lot of thought put into like trying to connect the weapons with the characters and what that means about them or anything like that?
Yeah, I would say so. It's funny. We actually, my wife and I had a lot of debates about what type of guns the characters would have and mm-hmm. Where exactly is this in like history, even though obviously it's like a different, it's a fantasy world.
Yeah, right.
Love that.
it actually took us a little bit of time to agree that any character might have a revolver that could shoot multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Because originally we had entertained the idea of everything being like gunpowder, like you had to load.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Like Civil War style.
Yeah, that'd be wild.
But I ultimately we decided not to go with that because it just felt like it was going to slow the action down too much.
Mm-hmm.
No, for sure. I mean, I think that Vera is like very much based on like a Clint Eastwood style character, like. Mm-hmm. Doesn't talk a lot. There's no bullshit. It's like, you know, just like really. And so I had this vision early on of her pulling out a rifle and just being like, you know, and it's just like this guy in the preview, you know, it's not the dragon shooting fire that makes him stop. You know, it's her holding this rifle and being like,
right.
You know, you make a move, you know. Your move, punk.
Yeah.
I wanted to have her say punk in it, and my wife was like, nah, we can't
do that. Can't do that. That's what she drew the line up. Yeah, goodbye.
So if you guys had all these debates about the timeline and everything, which I love, that's amazing, but at any point did you, her, or both of you like start to like veer into the, okay, well, it takes place in this time, so how does dragons in the Old West affect the future of America's growth over time, and where are we today now that dragons are
that are part of our lifestyle? Yeah.
You know, that's,
and when
that's...
do I get that comic?
Yeah.
I will say that we have a plan. We have a 10-issue plan for this comic. Mm.
Cool.
And if it's very successful, we have talked about a sequel comic that would be like set sometime in the future where we would see some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's we've like had a few brainstorms, but you know, that's if we can make 10 issues of this comic, that will have been a incredible success. So, you know, it's like, I don't know if you guys are Brandon Sanderson fans, but like the first Mistborn,
yep,
trilogy, and then he has like this big time jump, and then it's like mm-hmm. in the old Wild West, and then yep. Presumably at some point he will have another time jump and have it whatever industrial era, whatever he's gonna do.
Mm-hmm.
And Avatar The Last Airbender did a similar thing,
yep,
to what you're
yep.
talking about. And so I think that's always something I'm interested in, but you know, I'm still, even though I've been writing comics for 8 years, I'm still relatively new. I haven't gotten to the point where I feel like a series is established enough that I could have like a giant time jump like that.
Mm-hmm.
I have recently completed I have 3 trade paperbacks now, which feels like a huge career milestone for me.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
It is.
Yeah, it's pretty huge. Yeah, congrats on that. And thanks. And I would say, yeah, I mean, because like you've been writing for 8 years, but make, like you said, making a time jump like that and making sure all the pieces fit.
Right.
Of like, okay, how would this realistically affect everything? And I don't think we really see it in the art at all, but like I'd have to think that if there exists a mode of transportation like dragons, where does the railroad fit in this?
The railroad is actually part of the story, is actually an important part of the story.
Cool. Yeah, I was wondering that. I'm like, I don't see any trades or trade heists going on.
Yeah, no, yeah. There is Vera, so her job at the beginning of the comic is that she's delivering mail on star routes, which is a real historical thing that was kind of like the Pony Express, but it's like dangerous, like mail deliveries that other people weren't willing to take on. Mm-hmm. You kind of had to be a real badass to take them on. And then, but they basically went obsolete with the introduction of the railroad, because once you get railroad lines across the country,
right,
then why do you need to pay someone exorbitant fees to, you know, ride a horse? And so that's kind of what happens to her, because even though you got dragons, you still got to think like a train that can deliver a ton of stuff at once. That's armored is still going to be more efficient. That's kind of where she starts to be like, okay, I need to look for other work. What other kind of things can I do without going back to a life of crime, basically?
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
Very nice.
Yeah, and I just want to talk about the rewards you have for the backing here.
Sure.
We have, it's 3 different, or no, two different covers and a print, right?
Yeah, so we have 2 different covers, and the way that we're doing it on this campaign is that the regular cover you can get in our sort of standard edition, but then there's a collector's cover which has like a foil stamped logo and like numbering on it, and we're only going to print enough of those, like after the backer kit surveys go out, and if anyone adds extra copies on at that point, we'll send in our print order, and we're only going to order enough to fill the campaign. And the same with the variant cover, which will also have that collector's edition treatment where it's got the foil logo and the numbering on it.
That's cool.
It's something I'm trying out, because something I realized a while back, and I did this with my last Unicorn campaign as well, is that like people do pay a premium price on Kickstarter, and you're part of like the creation of something. And so I think being able to offer exclusive rewards, like where I still want everyone to be able to access the stories later on if they want to. But I really want to be able to reward the backers who are getting in as it's coming out, as it's being made, that you have this cool premium version of the comic that nobody else will be able to get.
Yeah. No, that's pretty cool. I'm a sucker for foil treatment stuff too.
Yeah, Mike collects comics, so he likes shiny things.
Yeah,
yeah,
the shinier the better. That's pretty cool. And I noticed here, I don't know if it's still available, because the Kickstarter is live, everybody. But there's some original pencils, original inks, so by the artists here.
Yeah, so the variant cover is drawn by David Hahn, Carl Kiesel, and Ryan Cody. Who are really awesome. They've been working in comics a long time, and also they are the team behind Impossible Jones, which is a very successful Kickstarter comic. The inks, the original inks by Carl, have already sold, but as of this recording, the pencils have not sold yet. That's if you're into original art, that's available. I always like to do that when I can. And those guys do everything traditionally. More and more of the artists that I work with are purely digital artists.
Yep.
And so it's not always something I'm able to offer. But when I can, I like to do that.
No, that's cool.
Yeah. I understand why people are going digital, but it's such a shame that we don't have more physical artists now, and having all that, especially for the artists, like that's another avenue for them to make money down the line, is if they can sell the original art.
Yeah, right.
That's true.
Yeah. I always love hanging up original art and stuff like that. I mean, besides selling their prints and that, but and you have some stretch goals too that we haven't hit yet. One of them, we're probably almost at the first stretch goal, which is an audio commentary you're looking at doing for the project.
Yeah. This is something I like to do because it's, I feel like it's a real value add, but mm-hmm. stretch goals are hard because a lot of times they cost extra money. Right. And so this is something I've been doing as my first stretch goal for a lot of projects. The one that I'm like, I'm definitely going to hit this, because, you know, so basically my wife and I, we wrote the comic together and we'll get on and essentially record like a 30-minute podcast almost. That's like mm-hmm. just talking about how we collaborated and also what our plans are for the future of the book. And I know a lot of people, you know, like that. And what I like about that too, is that it can go out to digital and physical backers, you know, it goes out mm-hmm. to everybody.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of times the stretch goals, I like to sort of go back, interchange them. Like this stretch goal will go out to physical backers and then mm-hmm. this one will go out to everybody. Even though if I do a trading card or whatever, I can send that like digital file to people, but that's, you know, of course not the same.
Right. No, that's cool. Yeah.
That's like the one I've been seeing a lot recently. I really like is the phone and desktop wallpapers.
Oh,
that's cool.
Which is a really cool one I've seen quite a bit where it's like, yeah, that's nice. Cause then, like you said, digital people can get something for their.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's a cool idea. Yeah. And the trading card one at 12,000 is another cool idea that you have on there.
Yeah. I have quite a collection now of trading cards. Early on, I used to always automatically include a trading card like as mm-hmm. an add-on with every campaign. And I've been like moving more toward putting those as stretch goals.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think people like them, but they don't always like to spend extra money for them. And
right.
But if it's like a free bonus, then it's like really cool. Mm-hmm. Like everyone always likes that. And so, a trading card. And hopefully as we go throughout the series, there'll be a collection of trading cards of all the characters. I mean, over on my shelf over there, I've got probably like 27-28 trading cards of all the different characters from all of my different books, which That's is cool. Awesome. Which is cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
What Mike wants to know is, are they Magic the Gathering legal?
Or? Yeah. Yeah. Using us proxies or something.
Yeah.
When are you making a trading card game based on your cover?
You know, that's so funny because we talked a little bit before we started recording about card games. And one thing I would love to do someday is actually make a trading card game.
That'd be so fun.
Whether or not that would be based on like one of the comics I wrote or it'd be something else, I don't know. But it's just very daunting. You know, like at this point, comics are like, I know how to do it. I know how to write them and create them and market them. But like a card game, whew.
That's
like very daunting.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give it out on air, but I've had this idea for one for a while. And just the idea of sitting down and making it is like, I don't have time for it. But I don't want to give up the idea because I think it's really good.
Yeah. Should do it one day, man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this, Caleb. I think Dragons and Westerns is a good place to start for a trading card game.
yeah
and you can get vampires involved, I don't know, so that'll work too, you know?
Definitely something that hopefully at some point, I don't know if it'll be next year or 10 years from now, but at some point hopefully somebody will see a card game from me. We'll see.
That'd be amazing. So I mean, you've hit your goal, you've doubled your goal now of $3,500. You're at almost 350 backers. We still have about a month to go as this episode drops, everybody. Is there anything else you want to like share or just mention, you know, about it for people who are looking to back the book?
I mean, I would say that, you know, this is a brand new series. Everyone on every Kickstarter says this is a great jumping on point, mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, this truly is because it's the first issue of a new series.
Right.
In a month and a half, I'll be launching another book that is absolutely not the first issue. That's like it's a crossover, and I counted it up. It's like the 12th issue if you count all the series that are going into the crossover.
Yeah.
But this one is truly a number one. And you know, it's, if you like Westerns and you like dragons, you know, I hope you'll check it out. Cause I also think it's, one of the best things I've ever written. I think, I mean, I say that a lot, but I will say that collaborating with my wife, who is like a very talented novelist, I think has really taken it to the next level. There's mm-hmm. definitely, you know, things that you have to do when you're collaborating that, that you don't do on your own. I mean, of course I have beta readers and editors and people who right. help me out, but when I'm writing my own thing, if I have a beta reader or an editor say, I don't think you should do this, I can be like, well, screw you. I'm going to do
yeah. what I want to do. Right. When you're co-writing, it's a little different. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But so I think it really elevated and I think it's great. So yeah, it's awesome. And if you want to find it really easy, you know, obviously you can search on Kickstarter, but you can also go to dragongrit.com.
Oh, great.
And I also wanted to say before we say our goodbyes to everyone out there that does back it, not only do you have this great jumping on point that Caleb just mentioned, but you can also add on the old books. Mm-hmm. And Mike and I are both big fans of Vampire Detective in Space.
Yep.
I mean, it's right there in the name, everybody.
Yeah, come on. What else?
And even though I joked about not cracking Unicorn yet, I did buy, I think Scout published the first issue.
Scout published the first issue, and then I published the first volume. Mm-hmm. So can all those comics are on there, and all those are complete stories. Modern Mythology is an anthology that I edited, so it's like a bunch, like 17 different stories, mm-hmm. and only one of them is written by me, but I think it's pretty cool. And then so that's my library right there.
Nice.
It's all available.
So yeah. I was going to say that I did read the first issue of Unicorn. I did really like it. So I can
thank you.
I can say at least the first issue is really good, everybody.
There you go.
Appreciate that.
Awesome. So, I mean, anything else for our listeners, our viewers, you would just direct them to the website, dragongrit.com, you said?
Yeah, dragongrit.com.
Yeah, and if they want to follow you and like all the stuff you're putting out there.
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Caleb Palmquist. But if you really want to keep up with what I'm doing, if you go to CalebQuist.com, there's a link to sign up for my newsletter. And because I often forget that things like Twitter and Instagram exist, but I send out an email every week.
Awesome.
With spoilers, you know, a look at what I'm doing and also on my newsletter you can get free stuff. People who are on my newsletter get free stickers and stuff.
Oh, cool.
When they back my comics. Yep.
That's awesome. All right, sign me up.
And to everybody out there watching or listening, as always, look at the show notes. I'll have these links in there so you can just click on them. You don't have to type anything, you just got one click and you're there. So make sure you do that and check out the book and all of Caleb's work, because it's all good stuff. Caleb, thanks so much for stopping by, chatting with us for a minute, and we really appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks. Thank you.
And we're back.
We're back. Dragon Grit number one on Kickstarter right now. It's got almost a month left, and we're double the goal. So get in. Get in while it's hot.
Get some of those stretch goals.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Very intrigued because it's much different than his last book, which was the Unicorn Vampire Hunter book.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. Cool covers too. I think it's awesome. Comic news. DC announced new Black Label comic. Hell yeah, it's not Batman for once. Coming this summer from writer Mariko Tamaki and artist Javier Rodriguez is Zatanna Bring Down the House. In this Black Label series, Zatanna Zatara is the greatest entertainer in the world and the worst hotel and casino off the Vegas Strip. The ritzier hotels would love to have her as a headliner, but since the devastating instance of magic gone wrong changed the course of her childhood, she would rather rock her trademark top hat and fishnets as a sleight of hand stage act than bother with real magic. That's interesting. I like that art for the cover.
That cover's phenomenal.
Yeah, that's a really cool cover. Javier Rodriguez, amazing art. Even with the logo across her back and stuff, that's just awesome.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I'll probably check this out. I don't know, it sounds like an interesting Zatanna story to me.
Yeah, this is... I'll say to aspiring artists out there, like, cover art 101 right here. Like, yeah, it's simple, but it pops.
Yep.
It's so good. All that said, I'm not a big Zatanna person.
Mm-hmm.
Much like Bizarro, when she speaks, I get annoyed.
Oh, because her spells backwards. Yeah. Well, if this book's any indication, she's not doing magic, that type of magic anymore.
Yeah, we'll see. But I'll say, as much as I'm enjoying the Black Label stuff, and they could keep doing Batman stuff as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
It is kind of nice that it's not a Batman book.
Right.
It is nice once in a while to be like, DC Black Label, and it's not a Batman.
Yeah. No, I like most of the Black Label stuff just because it's like they're taking a chance on something.
Yeah. So hopefully this is good. Mariko Tamaki, she doing the Detective Comics run right now?
I think so. I haven't been reading it.
I see her name flying around, but I don't think I read it.
For sure doing some stuff with the DC for a while now.
Yeah, so.
And
it's going to be a pretty book because Javier Rodriguez.
Yeah, that
art. Good artist.
Marvel announced this summer we'll learn who will be Apocalypse's successor in the Marvel Universe following the Krakoa era. Answer will come via four issues, of course, called X-Men Era of Apocalypse. We were written by Steve Fox with art by Nitho Diaz. So the synopsis, throughout the Krakoan Age, Apocalypse underwent a radical transformation from supervillain to revered mutant leader. More invigorated than ever, Apocalypse now returns to Arako to steer his former homeland towards new destiny. But his work on Earth still needs to be done, especially in the wake of Krakoa's brutal fall. Who's going to be his successor? A mix of icons, fan favorites, and villains. The 12 mutants in the running are Armageddon Girl, Cable, Cypher, Emma Frost, Exodus Forge, Gorgon, Mirage, Mr. Sinister, Penance, Richter, and Wolverine, or a Kinney version. I don't know any of those except Cable, I guess, and maybe Emma Frost.
You know the Wolverine, it's X-23.
Oh, X-23, okay, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, is this anything to get excited about?
Like, I'm just so not an X-Men guy.
And yeah.
I liked Apocalypse in the Krakoan era, mm-hmm, when I was reading the Hickman stuff, because he was almost like he's almost like the town elder. Like, okay, he'd been around for so long, and they almost used him as like the guy who was like teaching everybody the history of Krakoa. Like, he knew the language, and he changed his name to the symbol that was a Krakoan language and all.
Okay.
It was weird, but it worked.
Yeah.
And it was kind of funny too, because I'm, you know, as a reader, you're like, Krakoa just like came out of nowhere, dude. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
And I liked his connection to Arako when they did that. That was different. Honestly, this all is just filler until Apocalypse comes back, because he's going to come back with everybody from Arako. It's going to be a big event, and that's when I'll have an interest. But I don't see anyone here really taking that role. Maybe Penance, but yeah, I don't know.
I guess we'll wait and see.
Yeah,
you got to buy all four issues, kids.
Or I'll just read about it on the internet, Mike.
Oh yeah, just read about it after. Image Comics announced a new series from writer Kieran Gillen and artist Casper Wingard called The Power Fantasy. That's some cool art. In the world of comic books, the term superpowered individual can mean a lot of things, from the ability to fly to invisibility. But in the world of power fantasy, it has more specific meaning. Anyone who has as much destructive power as the United States nuclear arsenal. In this world, six people are considered superpowered, and the world depends on them never coming into a conflict. Interesting. So we have a collection of people here that are really powerful, and we don't want them to be upset with each other.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting twist on superpowers or superheroes.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I might check that out. I like the art a lot.
I like the art too. Kieran Gillen's a hit or miss guy for me. So yeah. I might wait to see what people say, but
yeah,
you got my attention. I will say to I didn't put it in here, but to the PR people, you probably shouldn't have put "this comic will remind you of Watchmen and The Boys."
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, for sure.
Because immediately I'm just like, well, you set the expectation of two of the greatest comics of all time.
Yeah, you really just, yeah, that have been around for years, have multimedia. That's really good.
Yeah. So, yikes. But I don't know. It looks interesting, if nothing else.
Yeah, it does.
I like the character designs too, especially this woman right here with her weird rainbow kind of poison ivy thing going on.
Yeah, I think they're all pretty interesting designs.
So
looking forward to that.
Definitely.
Image Comics and Skybound Entertainment announced two more G.I. Joe 4-issue series that will follow up Cobra Commander and Duke this summer. So now we have Scarlet, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Marco Ferrari. Series will focus on Shanna Scarlet O'Hara, a Bell badass undercover agent who is one of the original modern G.I. Joes. Okay, pretty cool. And Destro, written by Dan Waters, art by Andrea Bresnan. The series will follow the classic villain Destro, promises to change the balance of power in the Energon universe. Cool. Don't know anything about any of these characters, but I think that's awesome that they're kind of doing these miniseries for everybody.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm the same way. I don't know anything about either of these characters, but I've loved Duke so much, and I've enjoyed Cobra Commander so much. I'll probably check these out.
Nice. Awesome. They're doing it right, then. That means they're doing it right.
Yeah, and I was a little worried when I was reading it, because I'm like, oh, Joshua Williamson's not going to continue it. But yeah. Kelly Thompson's really great.
Yeah, she is.
And I enjoy Dan Waters when he pops up. So we'll see what they got in store. But they're doing it right at G.I. Joe right now. Like, it's weird how right it is, so... down for more.
Yeah I know I have to catch up on the Duke book for sure.
Yeah, and I really just want them to announce already when they're gonna reprint Real American Hero, because I'm there, like, you got my money, now just make the product.
Do it. After a long week of bad news for Scout Comics involving but not limited to not paying creators, they announced a merger with entertainment company Element Media Global. The brand plans to relaunch this summer with a brand new imprint, especially for horror comics, called Dark Harbor Comics. This means that Scout will now have three imprints inside the Scout brand, and promises to have better access to entertainment adaptations like movies, TV, and video games. Yeah, interesting for them to announce this with all this shit going on that I've been seeing from creators.
Yeah, to say the least.
Yeah, and then the response, I did see the response from the CEO, was it, of Scout, that did not seem like a response at all.
Well, one of the questions that was put out there was like, does this come with funding?
Yeah.
Because you're not paying creators.
Right.
And we've seen this story before, Mike. Yeah. It seems like Element Media is this like very like D-list company that just saw an opportunity, and I think this is one of the death throes of Scout Comics personally. This is exactly what happened with Aftershock. Like, they got they didn't get bought out, but they got an influx of money. They became Aftershock Entertainment.
Yep.
Then ran out of money and stopped paying people. And have you heard about a new Aftershock book recently, Mike?
Nope.
Similar but not the same, Valiant, they got bought out, and then they were putting out one book a month for a while there.
Yeah,
because there was no return on the investment from the big company. The list goes on and on and on. I think this is where this lands, is we'll see them thrive maybe for a few years with some extra funding, but unless they get something that hits big, unless, you know, they make a movie or something that gets them a lot of money, Element's going to be just not doing it.
No, for sure. Yeah. For sure it's not.
It's also really funny, if anyone wants to Google some of the actual journalists out there writing their articles, people were like trying to figure out who Element Media was.
Uh-huh.
And if I remember correctly, all of them were saying the same thing, which was we Googled them and they're not even the first thing that pops up when you Google Element Media, at least at the time of the announcement.
Oh boy.
It was like a boys choir called Element Media.
Oh yeah. My God.
So that's a little concerning too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not look good, Chris.
Yeah.
Especially in the midst of all this stuff going on with people calling them out.
Yeah. And I'll just say, I feel like I said it before, but I think when Stickney was co-running the show,
yeah,
and that whole group, they were doing it right. Kind of what I say now about Mad Cave, like mm-hmm. they were putting out quality and little,
yeah,
and now they're putting out quantity, and yeah. the quality's not there.
Yep.
Obviously, you're gonna get some diamonds in the rough, but I don't know. I just don't see Scout being a big player in the near future.
No, which is sad.
Yeah, it sucks because I was a big fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really sad news this week. The passing of Akira Toriyama at the young age of 68. The official Dragon Ball Z Twitter account made the announcement saying that cause was acute subdural hematoma. I mean, he's best known for Dragon Ball Z. He's the artist behind Dr. Slump, Sandland. I'm a huge fan of Sandland. Character designer for Chrono Trigger, Dragon Quest. Yeah, he shaped most of our childhoods. Got us into a lot of anime and animation. His stuff today is just, I mean, it still stands up. It's amazing. So I kind of want to go back and rewatch Dragon Ball and everything.
Yeah, Sandland's actually, the anime is coming out soon too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, there's an anime and a video game coming out.
Oh, that's awesome.
Dude, it's been a weird week for me. Like, I had two absolute legendary Eagles players retire this week, mm-hmm. and like sandwiched in between it was Akira Toriyama passing away.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about how like we've been getting more into manga and anime
mm-hmm.
and everything, but honestly, it all starts with Dragon Ball. I think for both of us, but definitely for me.
Yeah.
Throughout my life, been attracted to his work. I love Dragon Quest. Mm-hmm. Chrono Trigger obviously is a great game. I watched Dragon Ball, and then I started discovering other things through that. And one of the great things about him was he was also somebody that was championing other people's work.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember reading things where he was like, for instance, he was a guy who said that he thought that Seven Deadly Sins could be the next great anime/manga.
Yep.
And that was the reason that show/manga got big.
Mm-hmm.
And also just going back and seeing all these creators talk about how Dragon Ball was so influential on them, whether it's the guy who created One Piece and Naruto, the people who made Powerpuff Girls, like they mm-hmm. showed scenes where they literally frame for frame did homages to Dragon Ball.
Yeah, Dragon Ball.
I find that among younger people, Dragon Ball is kind of a joke
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't get enough respect. And I hope that ends, because now all these kids who are watching things like One Piece and becoming big fans of this stuff are seeing these creators are like, no, we're not here without this guy and without right. that manga.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. He's such an influence on everybody.
Yeah. It sucks that he's gone, man. Like this is on par with Stan Lee's passing.
Mm-hmm. This is huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I would say that, and he was in the middle of working on that new Dragon Ball show.
Yeah. It
sucks.
That's what frustrates me too, is he was finishing up Sandland. That's coming to, I think, Disney Plus, maybe Hulu, maybe both. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Next month. And so he's never going to see that.
Yeah.
And he brought back Dragon Ball from the dead.
Oh yeah.
After basically this anime studio tried to ruin it with GT. And then said, fuck GT, I own it again. We're going to do Dragon Ball Super.
Yep.
And he doesn't even get to finish it.
Yeah.
So hopefully he had a good outline and people with respect can finish that for him. But
yeah, we'll hope.
It's just,
let's hope that doesn't they don't turn into another GT or something.
Yeah, it's fucking rough, man. Yeah. But yeah, we'll always have Dragon Ball Z. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it happened to be the week that I watched that movie, coincidentally, that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and I actually, so I haven't read Sandland.
Uh-huh.
But I own it.
Oh, and really?
Yeah, that quickly went to the top of my list this week. Like, I'm going to pull out Sandland and read it, because
I read it a long time ago, and I can't find it anywhere, because they never reprinted it, like, from, like, early 2000s.
So, I guess a funny story to kind of end this out. So, over the past, like, 8-ish years, I've moved quite a bit. So, things get, like, lost, and things get put in places, and you don't know where they are. I knew at one point I owned Sandland, and it got put in a box, and then I never read it.
Uh-huh.
And then I was going through all my stuff, and I couldn't find it. So I was like, fuck, well, I'll just rebuy it. It's whatever. And I found one online, and I found it through Amazon.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't list that it was the French version. And oh, I even went back and checked. I'm like, no, it says English in the purchase. Yeah. And I got the French one. I was so pissed. So I got my money back, sent it back and everything. Then went to go find it, realized it's really expensive.
Yeah.
Like you said, didn't get reprinted. And then was going through some comics. And for some reason, that's the one manga that I threw in a long box.
That's weird.
Yeah. And it was in a long box with, like, my Star Wars stuff, I think.
Huh.
Yeah, and so I found it. I'm like, oh, I have Sandland.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, now you have it.
So, yeah, hopefully next week I'll be talking about Sandland.
Nice. Yeah, it's a fun read.
Yeah.
Speaking of reading, I guess we'll talk about what we read this week.
Definitely.
For me, it wasn't a whole lot, but I'm a little behind right now. I read a review copy of Morningstar number one from Mad Cave Studios that we were sent. Andre and Daniel project. It's like a sci-fi thriller horror book about like this firefighter, one of the forest firefighters. They're like, and it takes place like the 40s or the 50s, I think. The guy dies like fighting a fire or something like paranormal happens, some weird like fifth dimensional shit. And then his family, like later on, his grandkids and daughter are going out on like a camping trip or something. And he sees his grandfather like floating there, like beckoning him to go with him. But it's like, it looks like some weird, like he's floating, but almost like it's got some like mystical, like something related to space. I don't know, just the way they drew it, like he's out of space and time or something like. And it didn't look like a good beckoning. It looked like an ominous beckoning. So it was an interesting story, though. I'll probably keep up with it.
Cool.
And then I got into Project Cryptid because Ahoy Comics is so nice to share those issues with us. This is kind of like a buy book, whether I enjoy it or not, because each book is like 2 one-shots of different cryptids and different teams working on them. So like the first one I really enjoyed, like Mark Russell had a story and he did a fun story about like a Yeti killing this like rich guy, this rich billionaire that was on this like, you know,
shocking
Mount Everest hike, which is funny. Yeah. The other story is about this death worm thing, which was more comedic. He like finds this death worm that saves him and becomes of some sort of like part of like an LAPD cryptoid like crime unit, it was like a fun story. The next one was okay. It was a Chupacabra story that was all right. And then there was one about like the ivory-billed woodpecker that was like killing people. I definitely like these more than I definitely enjoyed issue one more than issue two, but like they have returning people like Alyssa Quitney and stuff coming back from other Ahoy projects to write these books. I still think it's a really interesting project. And then there's like, you know, short stories in there by like Grant Morrison and stuff like that I didn't read because it's a lot of words, but
no pictures.
Yeah, no pictures. So it definitely is an interesting project. It definitely feels like an Ahoy book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that you're going to enjoy one issue more than another for sure.
That's the quote unquote problem with anthologies is, you know,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got to this week. And I picked up the new volume of Kaiju number 8 that I have to read. I think it's volume 9.
Yeah. But so I'll just say I read issues 1 through 6 of ROM.
Oh, nice.
I've been posting about those on Substack, and it's been so much fun. Yeah. I've sent you a few panels throughout.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
there's some really goofy, like 80s shit in it, but
yeah. A big flick later.
Yeah. I sent Mike everybody today. There's a panel where he's setting a hellhound on fire.
Yeah.
One of the human characters, and he says, "I'll just flick my Bic," yeah. And then throws a Zippo lighter at him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really funny.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, it's a fun sci-fi story. I love ROM so much. It's goofy enough. It's really weird because I didn't know that, like, the first MCU, the first Marvel Universe character that ROM interacts with is Doctor Strange.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah. If you don't count, like, the random S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that shows up.
Yeah.
It's a ton of fun. I'm excited to get further into it.
Nice.
Let's see, Mike. So, real quick, just as a reminder, Last Ronin 2 Revolution came out. I talked about it last week, but I reread it in print, and I just really love that book. And then also from last week, I read Punisher number 4, our buddy Dave Popose. Last issue, so I won't spoil too much, but I like the way he finished it up. Like, there's a big fight with Jigsaw. We find out that, like, it's not just that it's Jigsaw the person. He has a whole organization now. And it's very heavily hinted, influenced, whatever you want to say, that this is not the end of this character. Like, we're going to see more. So,
cool.
It's the end of the series. I hope Popose and Watcher are back for the next one, but we will see. And also last week was The Savage Sword of Conan number 1.
Nice.
So this is an anthology Conan book. I think they're doing 5 issues. So this is a $7 comic, Mike.
Wow.
Magazine size, but let me tell you, it's a freaking trade.
Yeah.
It's very long and it's got 2 stories in it. The first one is a one and done story about Conan. He's hired to be a general of this guy's army. There's a lot of deception going on. He gets revenge. He fights a dinosaur. It's awesome.
Nice.
And then the quote unquote backup story, which is the one that will be continued into the next issue, is all about character Solomon Kane.
Mm-hmm.
As he's trying to hunt down this creature that I think is a Yeti, but they don't really show him fully, so it's hard to say. And people are just driving by Mike's house.
Yeah, I know. It's like more. What the hell's going on?
So being kind of a noob to Conan, I'm not sure how Solomon Kane connects, because there's a lot of, like, the character is very Christian. So, like, there's a lot of Christianity talk throughout it. And there's guns and everything, so I'm assuming it's in the same world since it's a Conan book, but they didn't make that connection in this issue, so I'll be interested to see if they do that for us newbies, considering Titan Comics just got the license.
Yeah.
Batman the First Night.
Nice.
I really like this book. It's exactly as it was sold. It's a detective story set in 1939.
Yep.
Mike, you're getting a lot of Nazi history in this, just so you know.
Oh, boy. Great.
They literally, the only part of the book where I was just like, really, really, is Batman goes into meets a rabbi, and the rabbi takes him in and, like, helps him. And then the rabbi just info dumps what the Jewish people went through in Nazi Germany from, like, 37, 38 to 39. Wow. And it's just like, what does this have to do with anything?
Yeah, right.
But it sends Batman along his way after that. We get to see Bruce as, like, an eccentric billionaire,
mm-hmm.
and driving around in this, like, fancy car in the middle of the Depression and everybody being pissed at him for it.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
And we don't really see who the villain is, but there's a string of murders going on, and there's some sort of like there's some sort of person in the background creating basically zombies.
Okay.
So people are going to the electric chair and then they come back to life and kill people.
Interesting.
So I'm interested to see like the supernatural twist we're going to have here, but it was awesome. And I will confirm, everybody, purple gloves.
Oh, yes. That's all I needed to hear.
Shazam number 9, which has, it's a one and done, one shot issue. Shazam and the Creeper go fight a bad guy on a train.
Nice.
Not much else to say there. It was a lot of fun. And I just love the Creeper. Like, he's such a weird character.
Yeah.
And I like now it seems like Wade and crew are trying to bring in like very C-list characters that are of the same ilk as Shazam back in the day.
Yep.
They even bring up like the TV station they're interviewing on in the beginning of the book is Wiz TV or something like that. And I believe Wiz is like one of the first appearances of Shazam.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Wiz Comics. Yep.
So there was a lot of good, like, little Easter eggs throughout it.
That's cool.
And I like that it was just a one-done story, too. It wasn't building up to anything greater. Mm-hmm. Just fucking Creeper shows up. Let's go fight a bad guy.
Yeah, nice.
Spectacular Spider-Men, number one.
All right.
I always enjoy when Miles and Peter team up. So this was them teaming up. We got a Jackal who is also like all hulked out that they have to fight.
Hmm.
And it's somehow connected to both the spider people because it's not only Peter's old high school science teacher, but Miles's old friend from back in the day is somehow involved as well. So it was just a fun story. If you like the Spider-Man, Batman number 50, or I'm sorry, 145. We're back, baby.
We're back out of the Joker story.
It's Batman getting out of prison after he listened to Joker's long story about his year one. And meanwhile, the Zernar Batman and the robot armor is up there trying to convince everybody that he's actually Batman. And like he's telling Robin and everybody, like, no, like I'm Bruce. I just had to transfer. I'm the beginning of the singularity. I transfer my consciousness to this body because I couldn't do it anymore. Cat's going nuts over there. And nobody's buying it. And the whole time, like, Bruce is trying to break out of this prison and is being attacked. It was really good. I'm really happy. Although, be warned, the backup story is Joker-centric.
Lovely.
Ultimate X-Men number one. Nice. My last book, or actually second to last book. I was concerned about this because I'm not a big fan of Peach Momoko, but I really like this issue. It reminds me a lot of manga, to be honest. I mean, she is Japanese, but it's her style is like that. It's set in Japan. We've got this girl who is going to turn out to be Armor, everybody, who is just developing her mutant powers. She's graduating high school. An event happens, it sets off her powers, and she realizes she has this thing. And the whole time she's dealing with the loss of a friend that she feels like she could have helped. It's very heavily hinted that he committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And when she goes to the grave to like talk to him, this thing shows up, which I found out later was a character called the Shadow King, which is apparently like a very like deep cut for X-Men.
Okay.
So you and I of course don't know that.
I have no idea. Yeah.
And it's basically the shadow that's trying to convince her like that she's at fault and she should like take her life. So it seems like the Shadow King dude just is all about like preteens killing themselves, which is no bueno, Mike.
You need to have a little bit of convincing involved.
it was really good. I was shocked at how much I enjoyed it. It's not my favorite of the Ultimate books, but I honestly thought this is the one I would drop out of all of them. Mm-hmm. And I will definitely continue it.
Cool.
And then I read that book, The Last Mermaid. Oh, okay. Number one. Honestly, it's interesting, but I'm not gonna continue it.
Mm-hmm.
We see this mermaid, she's got a transformer mech. It can be a car or it could be a mech. She has to like change out her water supply because it's getting toxic. They didn't really explain that. They just expect you to go with it. And then it ends with her like in this place where she thinks she's going to find water and it like caves in on her and all the water spills out. And now she's this mermaid in the middle of the desert with no water. It just didn't do enough in the first issue to hook me.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't sound like it.
But I will say the art was gorgeous throughout it. But I kind of wish it was a little bit more of a story than just this, like she's walking around then trips.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yep. But Mike, that was everything I read this week. So where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter. And if you go in the show notes down below, I'll have the link to my like link tree thing with all of my links on it. So you can just click there and check everything out. But you can also find me at Substack at chriscomicscorner.substack.com. And you can find the show at fortresscomics_ on Twitter. Also, fortresscomicnews.com. If you want to support the show further, YouTube, like, subscribe, share, comment down below. Podcatchers, 5-star reviews, and then patreon.com/fortresscomics if you want to be extra special. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week. We'll see y'all here next week.